I'm Tavin Nasir, and this is Leadership Biz Cafe, a podcast that provides insights and tools to help leaders take on the challenges and opportunities found in leading today's workplaces. Leadership Biz Cafe is brought to you by Tavin Nasir Leadership, our leadership firm that offers keynotes and corporate workshops in both in-person and virtual settings that will help you to improve the way you lead and guide your organization's growth and future successes. To find out how we can help you today with your leadership challenges and discover your untapped opportunities, visit our website at tavinnasir.com. And now, let's meet my guest for this episode, Faisal Haq. Faisal is an accomplished entrepreneur, senior executive, and best-selling author with more than 25 years of cross-industry success. He is the founder of several companies, including Shadoka and Next Chapter, that focuses on enabling sustainable and transformational changes. Faisal's work has appeared in numerous media outlets, including Fast Company, Business Insider, Wall Street Journal, and Forbes, to name a few. He is also the author of two best-selling books, Everything Connects, Cultivating Mindfulness, Creativity, and Innovation for Long-Term Value, and Lift, Fostering the Leader in You Amid Revolutionary Global Change. Hi, Faisal. Welcome to the Leadership Biz Cafe.
Thank you so much for having me.
You and I have known each other for a couple of years, and I've been wanting to have you on my show for so long. I am so delighted that we finally have an opportunity here to connect and discuss some of your insights on leadership, Faisal.
Thank you so much. Yeah, likewise. I was, it's been a while since we connected. So yes, likewise, very much so.
So Faisal, to start things off here, I have to tell you what an optimistic prescription your book Lift is in terms of not only what's required of leaders to succeed in today's environment, but also what opportunities lie out there for all of us to do something meaningful through our contributions and efforts. Of course, in order to get to that optimistic understanding of what we need to change about leadership, we need to first address what's driving that change. And in your book, you identify four drivers of change: the fourth industrial revolution, COVID-19, climate change, and the spread of misinformation. So I was wondering if you could walk us through these four drivers of change, Faisal, and in particular, what their impact is on how leaders need to reassess the way they approach leading others.
Sure. I think it's when I was thinking about this, these four drivers are, on the surface seems very disjointed, but they're very much interconnected, and it's kind of propelled, and it's like an exponential effect how all these things has come together in last 3-4 years. So if you look at fourth industrial revolution, I mean, this is really a convergence of all kind of technology, not just automation and AI, but biomedical science and nanotechnology, IoT, et cetera, et cetera. It's all kind of converged, right? And it making us the way we work and way we think and way we interact very differently. So that's one. Second is that, we all know COVID-19, that has an impact how we work, how we behave, how we, play and how we interacted. And we have been completely, all of our social life structure has changed, forced us to change and rethink, right? And it has a long-term socio-behavioral impact that we will see probably many years to come, right? Then you look at climate change, that's very near and dear to me because, I was born in Bangladesh, which is which kind of nestles between Nepal and India and whatnot. And it's a delta whereby we have constant flooding from Himalayas, and it goes to Bay of Bengal. And as a result, many people repeatedly gets they get migrated by force. It's and they have to transplant somewhere else because they no longer have homes, and it creates a ripple effect on economy and people's livelihood or how they live, et cetera, right? So and if you look at last few years, we've been seeing that globally, everywhere, it has an impact on supply chain management. It has impact on production. It has impact on where we work and how we have to, you know, transplant somewhere else, whatnot. And that also gets connected to technology and how we live and how we work and et cetera, right? And then the fourth stuff, which is, I mean, you know, the technology is a blessing and is a curse as well. Social media and all these technology platform has created a enormous amount of misinformation, regardless whatever your belief system is, whether you're in the left or right, it doesn't matter. We are bombarded with all kind of misinformation, and we kind of live in an echo chamber, and it has an impact on all sorts of ways how we work and live and play. So if you look at those four things, those are all opportunities, but if you on the surface, those are major driver of change in a negative way, but that also creates the opportunity to create a lot of positive things that individually we can focus on, but also as an organization.
Absolutely. I mean, I agree with you. I think for many people, the focus tends to be on the impacts of the fourth industrial revolution and COVID-19, where especially in the conversations I've had with leaders over the past year, a lot of the conversation tends to pivot around discussing the impact of automation and AI implementations in their internal processes. And of course, we're seeing lately, as a result of COVID-19 and our understanding of how people no longer need to focus on where they work, it's more about how and when. And there's this push and tension, we're seeing a growing tension between employees and employers, where it's becoming, do we go back to a return to office approach, or do we recognize that the way of work has fundamentally changed and will continue to evolve over time? But as you point out, and when you really think about it, these other two elements of misinformation and climate change are really playing a part in all of this. For example, climate change is impacting supply chain, which can impact some of your choices in terms of technological changes you want to make in your organization. It also impacts maybe where your organization can set up shop because it might become more prohibitively expensive due to environmental reasons. And then misinformation, you know, there's a lot of conversations lately about collaboration and getting people to work together, but if we're becoming more polarized thanks to misinformation on a variety of topics, that can impact our ability to really collaborate with people and not just cooperating with people, as you mentioned in your book.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, look, I mean, we have also lots of conversation about diversity, inclusiveness, you know, et cetera, right? It's hard to do that if we all live in echo chamber, and if we're all biased, how do we become inclusive, right? Because inclusivity comes from having an open mind and you know, like a beginner's mind to learn and beginner's mind to accept other people and their belief system. But if you're already biased with all kind of misinformation, it's hard to embrace other ideas and other topics and other culture and other race, orientation, whatever you want to call it. It's difficult to do that, right? So, and then that impacts how we collaborate and co-create, right? I mean, innovation does not come without co-creation and collaboration, but it's hard to do that if you're all biased because we don't just believe each other because we live in our own little echo chamber, right? So right there is a big impediment, right? And then you look at, you know, the technological stuff that we talked about. I mean, you know, I mean, I've always said this, you know, and I've always worked in a kind of a hybrid mode because my teams have always been very global in different time zones. And, you know, but you got to manage progress, not people. I mean, I think we still kind of try to manage people in terms of, you know, how many hours they punch in and you know, where they are working from, this and that. But, you know, if we focus on managing progress and impact, that mind shift change could have a significant thoughts about where and how people work and what's, you know, I mean, there's something to be said about, you know, face-to-face interaction, and you can really replace that, but it also doesn't have to be somebody has to come and sit in your office 40 hours and that makes somebody productive, right? So there's a balance, you know, and all of this is about careful and crucial balance between, you know, how we think about it, how we do it, and how we measure impact.
Now, Faisal, one thing these four drivers of change have created is a fair amount of uncertainty about the near future, let alone what's the long-term view. And I love this bit of personal advice you share in this first section of your book of lessons learned for how to deal with uncertainty brought on by such upheavals as you've described. Of course, one that I particularly like mirrors an idea Canadian astronaut and former commander of the International Space Station, Chris Hadfield, mentioned, is something he learned from his time at NASA, which is learning to sweat the small stuff. Because if you think of what you could do if the worst thing happened, you no longer worry about it because you know you have ideas of possible solutions or workarounds. So I was wondering, before we delve into the opportunities these four drivers of change are creating and are leaving out there for us to explore, could you share some of these personal lessons of yours for how we can deal with these disruptive changes that make it harder for us to have a clear view of the future?
Yeah, I mean, look, that example is a great example. On my desk, I have the last lecture, and you obviously know in the last lecture, you know, it's like, one of the things that I have learned is that, you know, you can't really, focus on future and but also cannot be fearful about future, because if you look at, you know, I look at these things as a kind of like a optimism with pragmatism, in the sense that if you prepare for the worst case scenario, then maybe the changes and surprises wouldn't be so shocking, right? And certain things you can't plan for. So I will give you a very personal example, and it's very, very personal. When I was writing Lyft, when I thought of writing Lyft, I have a 19, at that time my son was 18 and a half. He started college, and he comes home and sick. We think it's COVID. Turns out he has a rare blood cancer, and you don't expect your child to come home with blood cancer news, right? So it kind of totally threw our whole family upside down, and I kind of stopped everything. But I went back to last lecture, and one of the things I learned from last lecture was that it doesn't matter what the future is, you have to plow through and plan for the worst case scenario and find motivation into it and do the best you can do for a positive present, and hopefully for a positive future. So I, you know, found the energy and the motivation to take care of him, and he is doing fine, by the way, now. And but also, I created a whole new organization, and I'm doing quite a bit of writing, all for the hope of generating enough revenue for 100%. Charity donation to cancer research, right? So I wouldn't have done that, if I wasn't facing with that kind of personal adversity, right? So often enough, you know, these personal adversity creates opportunity to do good for yourself and for others. And to me, that's the inspiration and the optimism you can find in anything. So whether you look at pandemic, whether you look at climate change, whether you look at disastrous financial situation or personal health issues, sometimes it's great opportunity to do some good. So that's how I live, and that's what I try to portray in Lyft, messed up while I've been dealing with, taking care of my boy.
Well, I have to tell you, Faisal, I appreciate you sharing this personal story, and I'm relieved to hear he's doing better. As a parent myself, I know from personal experience how quickly the solid ground beneath your feet falls apart when something happens to your child, even though that's when you need that solid footing to be there. So I appreciate you sharing this, Faisal. And again, I'm really glad to hear he and your family are doing better.
Thank you. Thank you so much. You know, we've been blessed, and I count my blessing every day. And in the book, we talked a lot about healthcare. Part of this was a kind of a renewed interest in healthcare because what I've been going through, and, my mother, who was elderly, and we had to deal with her during the pandemic because she was at an, you know, she's at a nursing home. So, I mean, you can look at things from a very different angle, and that's what creates optimism, right? So, as an example, I mean, telehealth, the way it got a renewed life because of pandemic, right? I mean, and a lot of this microsurgery and a lot of the way we are doing research in healthcare space, those are all opportunity because of these, these massive change drivers that we've seen last 5, 6 years. And I don't think we would have had that if we didn't have those kind of adversity. So I always look at things from that angle. And so you can't really plan for future, but sometimes when you have massive obstacle, you can look at silver lining and kind of shift your mindset to create something positive and focus on positive aspect of our global society.
So with this in mind, Faisal, I'd love to dive into how these four drivers of change are creating opportunities to transform things for the better. And I love how you point out that this all begins with the individual, that probably for the first time ever, each of us, and I think your story reflects that, has the ability to choose and do work that matters to us as much as it matters to the organization. And I think this reflects the current tension we're seeing, at least here in North America, between employees and employers, where there's a more public push from employers to get people back in the office full time, and employees on the other side who now have proof we don't need to operate under the old approach of 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, in order to achieve the organization's business objectives. Now, for sure, part of what's behind the return to office push by some leaders stems from an attitude of embracing a command and control style of leadership. But I do think in many cases, it's also because for many leaders, they don't know how to lead employees and teams that are more nebulous in nature. But you make a very strong case here for why leaders should embrace and welcome this change where employees are in more control of where and when they work, because ultimately, this can only lead to not only more productive employees, but also team members who will have developed new skills and abilities that will only serve to strengthen the organization as a whole. So could you elaborate on how this individual empowerment brought on by these drivers of change is actually beneficial, not just for the employee, but for their organization as well?
So first start with that individualistic mindset, which a lot of times leaders fail to do. And you talked about command and control. I mean, all of us grew up with that, at least people in our age group, we all grew up with that command and control, learning, right? So, I mean, I work for GE. I work for Dun & Bradstreet in the late 80s and 90s. And those were the Jack Welch's days, and you can imagine how commanding and controlling those kind of corporations were. And but you know, I mean, it kind of starts with, you mentioned that, it's hard for leaders to lead in this new world because it comes with it start with with how you see world and how you connect with the world with the lens of empathy, right? So if you can put yourself in the shoe of other folks, it's easier to lead people. And it's a very simple thing, but it is very, very difficult to practice because human nature is very much about self-preservation. And we always put ourselves by nature, we put ourselves first and then think about other people and whatever personal challenges they may be going through. So when you put that empathetic lens, that allows you to create this emotional intelligence, and that actually allows us to mindfully connect with the people that we're leading. So it's kind of starts there, and so many leaders haven't quite figured out how to do that because they look at spreadsheet and they look at, okay, I've got this 10 tasks that needs to be done this next month, next quarter, next year, and kind of like goes through that notion. And every meeting starts with, okay, where are we with this and where are we with that? And that doesn't necessarily, inspire people. But if you take that sense of empathy and ability to connect with people, you actually have a better chance of inspiring the folks that you're working with, and you have a opportunity to influence how those people that you're leading work with you, and then as a result, the output they're creating can be much more interesting and much more impactful, right? So, and technology is at a place now where it allows us to do that. So, for example, I mean, I work with a pretty extensive creative team, not just because of my writing and whatnot, but also because of the fact that my company produces these. We are in the business of producing software that requires a lot of creative interfaces and whatnot. And I've, the creative types, I mean, their whole biorhythm is different in the sense that some folks likes to work at night, some people likes to work in the morning, and each individual has their one way of working. And I can't tell them that, okay, look, I need you to come here at 5 o'clock. Sorry, come here at 9 o'clock and then produce it by 4 o'clock. It just wouldn't happen, right? So this lens of respecting and realizing how each person work and how do we collaborate with those folks in their terms to get the best out of them, utilizing technology as an enabler, is going to be the next generation process of influencing, leading, and executing what we want to do. And the reality is, look, I mean, this idea of office, I mean, what is, I mean, in a global environment, if you have five teams, what are you going to do? Have people fly from India and from Spain and from Texas and everybody else in your office in New York? Well, you can't. So you're already working remotely. So once you expand your mind that, well, office is each person where they're sitting, then it changes, right? But, and you know, it doesn't work for every field. Like, for obviously that doesn't work when you're talking about a trauma center in a hospital, or if you're talking about a manufacturing plant where people needs to come together. But in most fields, it is possible to have that collaboration and coming people together for the sake of creation, not the face for the sake of, oh, I work and I get a paycheck. Those days are long gone.
I'm glad, Faisal, that you're bringing up the relevance of empathy in terms of how we lead today and going forward. But there is something else you talk about that is a point that I find we're not really discussing when we talk about how to go about creating these hybrid work environments. And it's the impact climate change will have on the future of work and how we go about working. Now, in Lyft, one of your co-authors shares the story of how her office building was badly damaged following a major earthquake in California. And she wrote about not just the productivity hit this had on the company, but also the emotional toll. Again, touching on that notion of empathy, because people felt they were trapped underground because of the various enclosures put around the building as it underwent repairs, that people kept calling in sick, and some people ended up just leaving because they just couldn't handle operating in that space that was so badly damaged by the earthquake. Now, if we think of the devastating forest fires that ravaged Western Canada and the U.S. last year, as well as those in Spain and other parts of Europe this year, not to mention the hurricanes that hit Atlantic Canada and Florida, there's definitely a tactical advantage for companies to have a more disparate instead of localized workforce, as those outside of impacted areas could keep certain processes of the company going while the others are dealing with repairing the damage at their site. So in light of the increasing severity of natural disasters we're seeing around the world, Faisal, do you think that we might start seeing this starting to factor into those discussions about the future of work in various organizations, that it won't just be about, oh, well, how are we going to maintain company culture and encourage collaboration, but really we're going to have to also start addressing this disruptor of change as well?
For sure. Look, I mean, it's kind of interesting because, I mean, if you look at technology, and because I come from that space, I mean, you know, we have always had like a redundancy and a disaster recovery and backups and this and that, right? I mean, we now move to cloud and we have backup of the cloud and they're all in different locations. If one location goes down, then we kind of quickly bring up the other location, right? But we haven't quite haven't come to the point thinking about our human asset the similar way. So in many ways, the diverse and multi-location workforce is an advantage, not a disadvantage, right? And the way you establish that culture and collaboration is, another thing we talk about in the book is, you need to make all these very systemic. So when I talk about like disaster recovery or redundancy from a technological point of view, like it's where East Coast is down, so we quickly bring up West Coast so that we don't lose our, the information technology infrastructure. I mean, if you start thinking from that point of view, there's a systemic execution that gotten in place that allows us to do that. Now, when we were talking about the human assets, the work process has to be also have some sort of a systemic execution and systemic infrastructure that allows us to say, okay, well, look, we're going to collaborate creatively, but everybody puts their things in one place that if people can get up at a different time and look at them, right? A lot of those basic thinking of systemic infrastructure in place allows us for better collaboration while we're applying this very empathetic outlook. You work whenever you feel like, and you work from whenever, but that also has to be managed with that systemic infrastructure. And then you if we are create a culture that are constantly learning from the experiences that we are having, which we call the experiential learning, that also allows us to kind of adapt quickly than just having a rigid outlook that, well, we have always done this way, this is how it's going to be. Otherwise, it doesn't work. I mean, we know from very well from the last 4 or 5 years that that is the furthest thing from the truth, right? What used to work 12 months ago absolutely doesn't work today, right? So that adaptive mentality comes from experiential learning only if you have an open mind to learn and quickly change the behavioral pattern and other way of doing things, right? So those three combination is, I think, is the key to success for next generation organizational development and also personal development, meaning the empathy combined with the mindset of systemic execution and then this constant learning pattern from experiences that we're experiencing with a lot of different changes that are happening around us.
And I think this reflects what I find is the heart of your book, and that is the message that the change we've been experiencing is not merely a blip or a detour, but it's a reflection of our new reality. And in some ways, I'd say it's less perpetual change than recognizing a continual state of societal evolution. And that given this notion of change being a constant, you make the argument that the best approach to the way we lead is embracing transformational leadership. And I really appreciate the point you've been making that what's key to being a transformational leader is not just being innovative or a risk taker, but that it's you demonstrate a genuine empathy to everyone around you, your colleagues, your employees, and those your organization serves through your various offerings. And that a key component to emotional intelligence is our willingness to exist in the opaque areas where things are not necessarily clear and understood. But that's where empathy helps us because it provides us with the abilities and behaviors to gain greater clarity when things are unknown or uncertain. And one way we're able to achieve that is through understanding something I've spoken about in one of my leadership special shots, which is about the power of our words. But you also point out it comes down to the kinds of questions we should be asking where our empathy serves to shape and inform systemic thinking and action. And in this section of your book where you're discussing, okay, how do we go forward and embrace transformational leadership and understand the relevance empathy, as you were pointing out, plays in it, you offer a lot of insightful questions for leaders to evaluate their current processes and where the external changes are. What you just said, like that what worked maybe 12 months ago doesn't necessarily work right now. But I was wondering if you could share some questions leaders should start asking themselves, not only to help them better manage through these changing times and to help them understand where maybe they need to reassess how they go about doing things, but also that would help them to start thinking more like a transformational leader.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, it really starts with, let's start with some very basic fundamentals, right? I mean, so you know, it starts with, okay, what's your purpose? Why do you even exist, right? And your purpose may be that, okay, you want to change the world. Your purpose may be also that, meaning as a company or an organization, that you want to, increase your revenue by 40% year after year, and they may be totally two different things, but they could be also aligned. I mean, you saw the recent announcement by Patagonia, where they just made the whole organization for doing good for the planet, right? So it really starts there, because that creates an alignment between who you are as an organization, and does that thing to the people that you have around you, right? And that kind of starts the process of, all right, so if I know that, then how do I add value, to the audience that I'm trying to reach, meaning my customer, my partners, my vendors, et cetera, et cetera. And then, then the next question is, how do I go about it? And how do I create that packaging and the pricing and the affordability that people latches onto these? So these are very basic questions, but if you dig deeper into that, and the more deep you go into, even though it starts with a philosophical tenet, it gets into pretty granular answer that creates that alignment to bring people together to do what you really wanted to do as a individual, but also as an organization, right? And that alignment is very, very critical for creating successful organization and constantly reinventing yourself. I'll give you this is a example that all of us can relate to. I mean, you saw during the pandemic, there was lots of restaurants just shut down left and right. But there are lots of restaurants also like thrive, because, people still needed to feed, and the folks that were building those restaurants, they own the restaurant, said, well, like we want to feed people, but we have to reinvent ourselves to adapt in the situation where the food can be packaged in a way that can be delivered, and it still stayed somewhat fresh, and people would love the taste of it, right? So, and those restaurants thrived, and their businesses quadrupled, and they couldn't keep up with the demand. On the other hand, some of the restaurants has closed, right? So that's a very basic example, and I'm using that because we kind of all kind of lived through it as a society. Or if you look at the telehealth as an example, I mean, we all needed to see doctor. And we couldn't have imagined like talking to a doctor over a phone, but we did it, right? And it works, right? So a lot of those things comes from people has a need. I have a passion, and my passion matches up with that need, and I can provide that value. And as a result, I can create a process and a product and an offering. And as a result, I can win together in the ecosystem. It's not winning while somebody else is losing, but it's winning as a community. And as a result, we collectively succeed. It's that kind of mentality. And those are the critical questions that every organization should be asking.
So Faisal, at the end of your book, you point out how these four drivers of change, the fourth industrial revolution, COVID-19, climate change, and the spread of misinformation have created both challenges and opportunities we hadn't seen or had to address before, and how this really isn't a bad thing, because what it's done is it's allowed all of us to be owners of our own futures, as we're empowered both to choose what we want to do with our own lives and also how we choose to create value and meaning beyond ourselves. And while that's a very uplifting idea, I think it can also be a bit scary, because it makes our world of choice perhaps more expansive than we thought it was. So could you share some advice here for how we can embrace that multitude of possibilities that we can open ourselves to, not only to transform how we lead, but also to hopefully make things better and maybe even help move the needle on some of these daunting challenges we face right now.
Look, I mean, it's there's a saying, like, people like structure and people hate structure, right? So, I mean, when we have too much opportunities, it can be scary because we can't focus. What is it that we are supposed to focus on?
Right.
And when there, you know, people always feel comfortable in the familiarity, right? So, for example, I mean, we've seen this in our kids and students, right? I mean, some students really thrived in the online environment, and some students felt very isolated and they couldn't really cope with this distant learning, situation that was created because of pandemic. And a similar, you know, similarly, like, some leader felt very comfortable leading in this change environment, and some leaders didn't. And some entrepreneurs' business went bust, some entrepreneurs' business boomed because of the situation, right? So if you look at it from that point of view, it's the adaptiveness and the, being able to connect with yourself. What is it that drives you, and what is it that you feel and find passionate about, and how does that connect with the rest of the world? That kind of creates that path for opportunity, and we are at a situation where our opportunity is enormous in terms of learning, creating new businesses, scaling a large organization to the next level, or starting the next startup, or you know, changing the way healthcare is changing, and leading the people, a workforce, in a different way. I mean, there's all kind of opportunities. The challenge is really figuring out where do you want to focus and how do you want to go about. And now, because the opportunities are so many, it's a little more daunting. You know, like, when I grew up, the choices were, do you want to become a doctor? Do you want to become an engineer? Or do you want to do this, right? And if I talk to my son, he would say, what are you talking about? Why do I have to become this and that and that? You know, I can be all of it or nothing. You know what I mean? So that's the challenge. You know, but you have to really connect with yourself. That sounds kind of like, overstated, but it's, you really have to discover your authenticity, and as a result, it creates opportunity. It's like your intention is your destiny, but it's, you have to really find that within yourself to be able to take opportunity, to take advantage of all the opportunity that all these things brings to the table, now more than ever.
Yep, and Fazil, you heard me laughing because I can very much relate to that binary choice that you had growing up. But it is wonderful to see. And I think one thing that we're not paying much attention to, how when most of us were growing up, we had these notions of what we wanted to be when we grew up. Some of us wanted to be astronauts. Yeah. Some of us wanted to be firefighters. Yeah. Others wanted to be doctors and so forth. And yet recently I watched this video of this leader visiting this elementary school to inspire children about what they could be in the future. And I remember the interviewer went up to this one girl and asked her, what did she want to be when she grew up? Did she want to be a scientist or a computer programmer or a doctor? And the girl just looked at the reporter and said, matter-of-factly, I want to be everything. Yeah. Now, this girl was probably 8 or 9 years old, but her response reflects this changing reality where there are a multitude of opportunities and possibilities out there. So why limit ourselves? Why not be open to going down different paths and exploring new ways, especially if that means we can do work that matters and that we can add value to some larger vision or purpose that we want to be a part of?
For sure. You know, it's the whole notion of, I mean, this is the challenge with leaders to manage employees, because everybody now wants to live in their own terms, right? We're all living, and we have the option to live in our own terms. I mean, think about, I mean, I couldn't have imagined my life the way it is now, or way it has turned out. Let's say when I started my career in late 80s, early 90s, because I went to work as an engineer in an R&D shop, right? So now I write, which is really passion project. I work with our government, I work with private sector, and I've got many hats, right? So, and I enjoy these multifaceted opportunity, right? And I wouldn't give that up for anything, because what fun it would be to be just do one thing and not, one thing and one thing alone, and not have that diversified experience which enriches who I am. Maybe not my bank balance, but it certainly enriches my the person I am. And I wouldn't give up that for anything. And that wouldn't be possible if it wasn't where the world is, and the way world allows us to explore all those opportunities, right from our homes, right? So that's I think is the most opportunistic thing and optimistic thing of current state of the globe as a whole.
Well, Faisal, I said at the beginning of our conversation, I said that your book was an optimistic prescription of what leaders need to do to not just succeed in today's environment, but to really embrace all the multitude of opportunities that are out there. And I certainly think the conversation you've taken us on has allowed us to take that journey where now we're looking past things like the pandemic and the fourth industrial age and the impacts these other things like misinformation and climate change are having, and realizing it's opening the door to new possibilities, new opportunities, and we need to be more open and receptive to embracing them. And key to that, as you've said throughout our conversation, is becoming more empathetic as leaders, that we don't just see things from our own eyes, but that we're willing to hear and understand how others see and experience the world, and how understanding that can enrich our understanding of the world and help open our eyes to those possibilities. And I got to tell you, Faisal, I knew I was going to be in for a treat being able to finally sit down with you and talk about your book and how the changes we all experienced have made it incumbent for leaders to embrace this transformational leadership style, where they are inspiring their employees to bring their best efforts to work instead of simply mandating how and where they work. And I have to say, this was just a lovely conversation, Faisal. I know we took so long to have it, but it was well worth the wait. I really enjoyed speaking with you, my friend.
Thank you so much. I've always enjoyed what you do and the things you put out, and we've known each other for a while now, and I was looking forward to it, and I totally enjoyed it, and thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Well, I gotta say, you did all the heavy lifting, my friend. I just like the audience here, just sitting here enjoying listening to you with your pragmatic optimism, which is something I'm pretty much in the same boat with you on. And so I just appreciate you, my friend, and appreciate what you shared through your book. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Taveri. It's a pleasure, an honor. And I'm glad we had this conversation, because I think we were cut from the same cloth.
Faisal and I have been talking about his book, Lift, Fostering the Leader in You Amid Revolutionary Global Change. You can learn more about Faisal's book and his work in the episode show notes, which can be found on our podcast page at tavernnasir.com/LBC. And if you're looking for a leadership expert to speak at your next conference, or if you're looking for someone to facilitate a leadership workshop at your next leadership event, please do check out my speaking page at tavernnasir.com, or just use the contact form so we can discuss the kinds of insights and subjects I can speak on at your event. I'm Tavernnasir, and you've been listening to Leadership Biz Cafe.